So how you are doing, both of you? David, you're a little bit tense, huh?
Yeah, I tend to be.
Yeah, typical German, yeah. You need to relax, yeah? I mean, the important thing is not to pressure, yeah, the Buddha or the breath, yeah? I mean, to observe it, yeah? And you have to be about the practice of samadhi. It is like riding a horse, yeah? I mean, if you ever have ridden a horse, yeah, then you know. I mean, you have to go with the call it? With the flow of the horse, yeah? You cannot, only if the horse, you know, goes in the wrong direction, then you pressure it a little bit, you know, until it goes in the right direction, and then you have to give yourself, yeah? And it's the same thing for the breath, yeah? For instance, when you observe the breath, you have to give yourself completely into the breath, yeah? And once the Buddha runs, automatically you give yourself into the Buddha, yeah? It's a key, you know? I mean, we always try, we try to make it, yeah? And that's where we break it. If we try so too hard, you know, we break, yeah? I've seen so many people, you know, I mean, especially in the monks, you know, or from Wat Banana Chat or Wat in England, yeah? I mean, try, they will try so hard, you know. After 2 or 3 or 4 years, they just disrobe because, I mean, of course you don't get anything, you know, if you try so hard. You have to go with the flow, yeah? Only when you see, you know, the mind goes out, you know, then you pull it back, you know, until it is in the right direction, and then you go with the flow, yeah? And then it becomes calm and calmer. It is this controlling. I mean, we are all, you know, educated in the West, and we learn to control from the day one of our birth, yeah? We control this, yeah? I mean, when we are older, when we are, you know, 12 years old, 14 years, we try to control our friends, we try to control our parents, and so on. We control our environment. And this is not the practice of samadhi. Samadhi is not practicing to control the breath or to control the Buddha. It's just, you know, to always, you know, give it a little, you know, give it a little wink, you know, so that the Buddha falls back into place or that the mind comes back, yeah? But sometimes we really have to pull hard, you know, because the mind doesn't want to go back. Yeah? Then you pull hard. But the moment it is back into the right direction, then we give, you know, then we give into it. Yeah? We follow it. We put ourselves into it. Yeah? I mean, how fantastic it is, just one breath, you know, we just need to imagine. Just this one breath. Completely be it with it, yeah? I mean, we don't... It is not, you know, I mean, some people have the idea that the breath should be like this or the breath should be like that. Because, of course, they hear, yeah? And I mean, they hear the description of samadhi, you know, in the beginning the breath is coarse and the breath becomes slower, you know, and the breath becomes more subtle and more subtle and more subtle and the breath stops, yeah? And then we try to do it in this way. But that is where everything goes wrong, yeah? If we do it correctly, if we do the practice correctly, then we stay with the breath, observe the breath. And that's what I told the Thais, yeah? The important thing of the practice is, yeah, when we practice samadhi, is that we know the breath. Yeah? We know how the breath is. We don't judge how the breath is. Yeah? Oh, no, the breath should be very calm, you know. Yeah? No. We know the breath is not calm. But we still can stay with the breath that is not calm, or we can still stay with the Buddha, you know, that is fast, or that is slow, you know, or that is not deep enough, yeah? We can stay. We observe it, huh? And I think I said it, you know, a few weeks ago, yeah? It is like observing, you know, I mean, we are here in nature, we can observe the birds, for instance, or we can observe the ants, yeah? We cannot control them. And that's how this, you know, when we do it, when we have some time, observe some of the animals here, you know, in the monastery, and then use the same kind of observance for your Buddha or for your breath. Yeah? Don't control it, yeah? And you will see it, and it happens to everyone, I guarantee you that. Yeah? It happens to me, you know, I mean, after 1 year, I suddenly caught myself how I tried to control it, you know, and then I had to relax all the time, you know, relax until I really could, until the breath goes freely, you know? We don't control the breath when we walk to the village, you know, in our thoughts, yeah? We don't control the breath, yeah? But when we observe the breath, we need to control it, yeah? That is a difficulty, and there's a lot of exercise that we need. It's a lot of training that we need, you know, to let go of this controlling, you know, of the control freak that we all are, yeah? You understand that, yeah? I mean, tell yourself sometimes, relax, you know, and then feel, you know, the whole body, you know. I mean, there's so much tension in the body when we really try hard. So, and then you just go, you know, a little bit through the body, you know, through the head, you know, through the shoulders, relax, through the arms, relax, you know, through the legs, relax, you know, and then we go back to the Buddha, yeah. Because this tension, yeah, I mean, it's not good for the practice, eh? So we can relax, eh? The beauty about when we are really good in samadhi, eh? The beauty about it, we can go to any place, you know, in the body, put our attention there, and then see what is going on there. And then we know there's a tension, yeah? I mean, sometimes it's a very old tension, it's a constantly there, then we look at it, and then we ease it up, yeah? We can ease it up, yeah? And then some thoughts or some memories from the past come up, you know, and then we have to relive, you know, maybe some of these things, yeah, and then let go of them, yeah, and say, okay, that passed, you know, it's gone, and I cannot change anything, yeah. But then over the time, you know, these tensions, you know, that have been manifested in our body can go, yeah, can all go, yeah. It is, you know, it is, what did they call it? I think it was in the 70s, end of 70s or end of 80s, psychosomatic, yeah? The psych makes, you know, makes a body, yeah? It is like we made this body, you know, at the birth, yeah? I mean, our chitta makes this body, yeah? Our kamma makes this body, yeah? And so everything, you know, and if we get rid of some of these things, yeah? Or let go of some of our, yeah? I mean, grabbing hold of something very strong, I mean, it is not a pleasant feeling. Letting go, you know, I mean, opening up the hand, you know, I mean, it is much more pleasant. But some of it is not, we are not aware of it. So we can go, you know, we can go to this place and relieve it and relax it. Yeah? That is the art, you know, that is the art. Once we are really good, you know, at good with concentration, you know, and not only concentration, but also with the sati, with the knowing of it, then we can go to any place, yeah? I mean, the beginning, we train it, of course, with dukkha vedana, with painful feelings, yeah? That's where we can go to the spot, yeah? We don't try to reduce the pain, we want to know what is pain, yeah? This is so important. We want to know what is pain. People do pain meditation or pain investigation to get rid of the pain. Yeah? Then the pain gets stronger and stronger, and in the end they have to, yeah, retreat, white flag, yeah, retreat. Yeah? No, we want to know what exactly is pain, where is it, you know? Huh? Is it anicca, yeah? Is it impermanent, you know, or is it constantly changing? And then we see, when we go to this place, I mean, it becomes stronger, and then it becomes weaker, it becomes stronger. Sometimes it's point-wise, sometimes it's area-wise, and then we ask, you know, where exactly in the body, where exactly in the spot is it? Is it in the skin? Is it in the bones? Is it in the tendons? Is it in the muscles? Is it in the flesh? And then it says, yes, of course, it is in the muscles. No. You know, since you are born, you have muscles. You know, I mean, how can it be there? Yeah? You have to be smart. You know, every answer that comes up from the kilesas, you have to say, investigate it again. Yeah? Don't believe it. You know, since I was born, you know, I have the muscles. You know, I'm not always in pain. And if I get up, you know, I mean, there's no more pain. Yeah? So if the muscles are really in pain, you know, I mean, even when I get up, you know, I should be in pain. But when I get up, I'm not in pain. Yeah? That's why we use it so often. Oh, it's so painful. We get up and the pain is gone. Yeah? How can it be in the muscles, yeah? I mean, don't get fooled by the kilesas who tell us of the little anatomic knowledge that we have, you know? And then we use it, oh yeah, yeah, I will break my leg, you know, when I sit longer, yeah? I mean, when you sit in the airplane from Brazil, you know, I mean, it takes 14 or 15 or 16 hours, you don't break your legs, you know, and you don't break your back. But when we sit, you know, for 1 hour in meditation, we suddenly think, oh, I ruined this body. So the investigation, and when you see, you know, when you really ask the question, when you really want to know, yeah, and when you want to know, you know, the object and the observer, you know, are two different things. The observer observes the pain constantly, and it asks the question, yeah, well, what is it, you know, how is it, you know, how does it feel like, yeah? I mean, breathe it in, you know, feel it in, don't push it away, yeah? I mean, breathe in the pain, yeah, and know the feeling of pain, yeah? Because at the end of our life, you know, we will be in big pain. In the beginning of our life, we are in the big pain, and at the end of our life, we are in big pain, yeah? Being, to die, you know, is very painful, yeah? When you go through death, you know, I mean, there are actually three stages of death, yeah? First, the breath stops, yeah? Then then the temperature, it heats up completely, it's up, and then all the elements, you know, explode, yeah? When you can go through all these three different kinds of dukkha vedana or painful feelings, yeah? Then you're not afraid of death, yeah? Because you know it. Yeah? That is the advantage of, you know, investigation of pain. But that is the end, you know. I mean, in the beginning, just deal with this kind of, yeah. And if you can do that, yeah, I mean, then you can investigate. You can go one time, you know, you can go through your body and look at all these tension points that are there, you know, and then relax them, you know, relax them and see what is behind it, yeah. And there's some sort of occurrence in our life, you know, if it manifests constantly, that we need to relieve ourselves of, yeah? So we look at the situation and say, okay, yes, but I can't do anything. Let's go off it, yeah? We don't have to hold on to it. Okay, you understand that? Yeah? And then two days ago, you know, I was talking about the generosity of the Thai people and the gratefulness, yeah? Generosity, gratefulness, yeah, and respect, you know, are three key ingredients in our practice, in our overall practice. Yeah? They are mentioned, you know, some of it, you know, are mentioned, you know, with the five precepts, but they are not explicitly. Yeah? So the five precepts, you know, I mean, we keep them when we are monks, we keep the 227th precept. When we are lay people here in the monastery, we keep the 8th precept. Generosity. Why is generosity so important? Yeah. First of all, you know, without generosity, we wouldn't be able, you know, of our previous lives, we wouldn't be able to stay here in the monastery, to come to the monastery or stay there even for one day. Yeah. But generosity, you know, I mean, material generosity is letting go of things, material things, you know, giving, you know, these Thai people, you know, I mean, they get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, they cook the food for us, you know, then they drive 1 hour, you know, to come to this monastery to give us food. And they're so happy about it. Yeah? They are really happy about it, you know, that they think, yeah? And if you remember, you know, when you wanted to, you know, give your good friend or girlfriend, you know, make a present for her, you know, you want to make, you're so happy, you know, while you're preparing this present, yeah? Yeah? And then you're happy when you give it, yeah? And then when you get something back, you're also happy. You know, I mean, why not, yeah? Why not cultivate that a little bit more? Generosity, yeah? It is much easier to let go of material things than to let go of our ideas, views, and opinions that are immaterial. Yeah? So, I mean, the more we train, you know, to let go of material things, the easier, you know, it is for us, you know, to let go of these opinions. An opinion, to let go of an opinion is not very easy. Yeah? It always sticks up. It always comes up. Ah, now I'm right. You know, now I, you know, this is like that. No, that is like that. People, you're reading the sutta, you know, and they're fighting about what the Lord Buddha said, yeah? You remember one time, you know, where the Lord Buddha, you know, the two fractions in the monastery where the Lord Buddha lived, yeah? The fraction, you know, that was more on the Dhamma, and the fraction that was more on the Vinaya, and it was about the toilet, you know, I mean, you know, using water to flush the toilet, yeah? And they were fighting, yeah? They were fighting in front of the Lord Buddha, and then the Lord Buddha came, you know, and they weren't even recognizing him. Their own teacher, you know, their own teacher who taught them the Dhamma and who taught them the Vinaya, they weren't listening to him. Then the Lord Buddha, you know, took his pole, you know, went out in the forest, yeah? So why shouldn't it happen now, yeah? The two people, you know, or three people read the suttas, you know, and then they fight about the meaning of it, yeah? People like that, you know, opinions, views, yeah? So that was generosity, yeah? Gratitude, you're being grateful for everything that is given, yeah? And just like I said 2 days ago, you know, I mean, be grateful for the things. Everything, yeah? I mean, the land that this monastery was built on was given to us, yeah? For our practice, yeah? The food is given to us. The clothes is given to us. The toothpaste, you know, the toothbrush, soap. Everything, yeah, everything that we wear, everything that we use in this monastery is given by lay people, yeah, and they have to work for it, yeah, and whoever worked, you know, whoever worked for a living, you know, how difficult it is, you know, how strenuous effort, you know, it takes, you know, to earn some money, yeah, and they, you know, part their money, you know, to give it to us, you know, or buy the things, you know, for us, yeah? So how can we not be grateful? And also the same thing with, you know, with generosity. Being grateful is such a nice feeling. Why do we do, you know, why do we get stingy? Why do we, you know, do all these things, you know, to ourselves that really cramp our heart, you know? I mean, generosity is opening the heart. I mean, in Thai it is called Nam Chai, yeah? The heart that flows out like water, yeah? I mean, I find it a very beautiful description, yeah? I mean, the heart that is completely open, that just flows out, yeah? And gratitude, you know, I mean, if you really sometimes, you know, when you can enter Samadhi, yeah, for the first time or for the first 100 times, yeah? I mean, the tears are running down because you're so grateful for the opportunity that was given to you, yeah? I mean, it is part of our heart, but it is locked up, yeah? I mean, we have put so many layers of dust and dirt and shit on it, you know, that we can't see it, yeah? But the moment we open our heart, you know, we can start to see it, yeah? So the moment we remove all this shit, we remove the dirt and we remove the dust, you know, there it is! It has always been there, but we just couldn't see it, yeah? And in the moment, you know, when we really enter Upachara Samadhi, I mean, it comes up, yeah? There is all these things. There is this gratitude, there is this generosity, there's this metta, this loving kindness that loves all beings, yeah? No matter if they are evil or if they are good, yeah? We don't distinguish in this case, yeah? I mean, they are just beings, yeah? No matter if it is a snake or if it is a tiger or if it is an evil person or a good person, yeah? I mean, we are connected, yeah? I mean, the samadhi is also the way to our heart, you know, the connection to our heart, to make contact with our heart. In the heart of all beings is one and the same, yeah? The citta of all beings is one and the same, yeah? But we try to separate ourselves, yeah? That's why when we enter Upachara Samadhi, suddenly, you know, all the loneliness that we experience in the world so far, you know, is disappeared. We're not lonely because we are connected, yeah? We are connected. We suddenly find the connection to all beings, yeah? That's why we are not afraid of anything. How can we be afraid? Yeah? We are connected. Yeah? We are one, you know, for a certain amount of time, yeah, or for a certain depth, we are one with all being. Yeah? This is Upachara Samadhi. Yeah? And then, the tears are running down. Yeah? Sometimes 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, so you're so happy. Yeah? And you don't know, you know, I mean, automatically this gratefulness comes up. Yeah? You don't ask for it. Oh, no, I should be grateful. No, it is there. It just flows out, yeah. as if we pushed water in a bottle, you know, and then we open the lid and push, it comes out, yeah. Rushes out, yeah. And respect is also important, yeah. I mentioned it before. Respect for the Dhamma, respect for the teacher, but also respect for every being, yeah. Every being has the right to be, yeah? And be it an ant, be it, you know, a mosquito, be it this, be it a good person, be it a bad person. They have their right of being, yeah? And we shouldn't, you know, we should respect that, yeah? But what we normally in the West think, you know, only good people earn our respect, and that is wrong. Yeah? Has nothing to do with respect, you know? I mean, it's just a judgment, yeah? I like him, yeah? Like him and respect are two different things. Respect the beings for their beings. Yeah? I mean, they have worked, you know, in previous lives, you know, to become a human being. Yeah? How can we not respect them? Yeah? I mean, they have kept their 5 precepts, so they have been good for a certain amount of time, so that they had, you know, the good karma, you know, to be born as a human being. Or, you know, being born as a devata, or, you know, being born as an animal, or being born, you know, as a ghost, or be it in hell realm. Yeah? So these are important things, yeah, that are normally not so often mentioned, you know, in the Thai teaching of the Thai Achan, because it is a little bit intrinsic in their whole life, yeah? I mean, when you see, you know, how respectful the lay people, you know, come to the monastery, not only treating the monks, but they are treating you as well, lay people, yeah? And treating you with respect, you know, and being generous, yeah? So it is still, yeah? I mean, when you go to Bangkok, you know, of course, you know, I mean, it washes out very easily because it's a big city, you know, and then it is just like in the West, yeah? But here in the countryside, it is still, yeah? It is intrinsic in their life, yeah? And not in our life when we were brought up, yeah? I mean, who is the first, you know? Huh? How do I get rid of my opponent, yeah? And so on, yeah, no, I mean, this is, you know, it is just like, you know, power game, yeah. And we are trained in that, and we didn't really realize it, yeah. So these are important things, yeah. Just to mention them again and again and again, because we tend to forget the thing. So, I mean, there was some question. Somebody asked some question about, what is it about, Just one at a time, you know.
Donpo, I would like to ask a question. You say you don't encourage the students to talk in order to focus on samadhi.
Yeah.
What about reading Dhamma books? Are they helpful? Or can they be a distraction, considering how the user is using the Dhamma book or audio talk?
The important thing is that we have to understand that the path of practice or the path of Buddhism starts with the kindergarten. Yeah? In the kindergarten, I mean, we are not reading Dhamma books, yeah? In the kindergarten, we learn how to pay respect, you know? I mean, we go once in a while in a temple and see it, yeah, like this ceremony, like that ceremony. And that takes ages, you know? That takes lifetimes, you know? Each time we go, yeah? And then we progress from the kindergarten to the primary school. From the primary school, we learn a little bit, you know, we learn the basics of Buddhism. You know? We don't read the texts and we don't read the Dhamma books, we don't have discussion. We just learn a little bit. And then we go to high school. And in the beginning of the high school, I mean, we go deeper into the subject. Yeah? So we haven't even started practicing that. But towards the end of the high school, we have both, you know, we have the teaching, yeah? I mean, we learn, we read, you know, about the Buddha's teaching, and we start to practice, yeah? But when we go to, and then, at the end of the high school, we enter university, and in the university, we don't need these books because we have gotten all the information that we need, and now we know we have to, yeah? We have to transform it into practice, yeah? And so, then, at this level of practice, It is not useful to read Dhamma books. What is useful is to listening to talks. I mean, if you have a teacher, to listen to Dhamma talks, you know, that he gives, you know, his encouragement. I mean, a Dhamma talk should be an encouragement for us to practice, yeah? It shouldn't be, it's a study, you know, I mean, he just has a dialogue over, you know, or epilogue, you know, over one of the Buddha suttas, you know, and then explains it like that. No, that we do in high school, yeah. I mean, normally when you listen to the Dhamma talks of Lung Pu Man or Lung Ta Maha Boa, I mean, they were always, you know, trying to encourage us to practice, yeah, and trying to encourage us to practice the most, yeah. So at this level, I mean, there is no need, you know, no need of Dhamma discussion, yeah? I mean, Lungta wasn't for Dhamma discussion, yeah? Lungta Mahabodha didn't really allow a library in the monastery so that people can start to read. What he allowed is, you know, cassette recorders, you know, at that time, you know, there were still cassette recorders with the tapes of his recorded Dhamma talks, yeah? Because that is helpful, yeah? I mean, you can listen, you know, you can go into samadhi and listen, yeah? Listen to the Dhamma talk while you stay with the Buddha or while you stay with the breath, yeah? Or just listen to the voice, you know, of Lungta Mahabodha.
Yeah, I find that I can listen to a Dharma talk again and again.
Yeah.
And this time, my mind is at this place.
Yeah.
And this is perfect. This is what I'm missing.
Yeah.
I listen to it again, my mind's over here.
Yeah.
And again I hear something else I didn't hear over here,
yeah.
But I hear it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is so much value in listening. I go through this again.
Yes. Yes, that is completely true. I sometimes listen five times to the same Dhamma talk of Lungta Mahabodha. And each time, you know, I get another nuance, of it, yeah. It never gets boring,
no.
Yeah. But if it is a epilogue, yeah, I mean, if it is a, you know, a Dhamma discussion, you know, a Dhamma exhortation, what I think you call it, exhortation of one of the suttas, then you don't want to listen a second. yeah, it goes in and goes out, you know, things, and that's okay, yeah. But a Dhamma talk, something that comes from the heart, you know, normally goes to the heart, yeah. And the interesting thing about a Dhamma, listening to a Dhamma talk, if you do it correctly, we listen with the heart, yeah. So, I mean, we put our attention on the heart, you know, and receive the words, yeah, that are spoken within the heart, yeah. And then it doesn't matter which language the Dhamma talk is in, we still understand. But it's difficult, yeah. I mean, we always try to understand, you know, this trying to understand, you know, what he says, you know, comes in and disrupts that, yeah. But when we listen to the Dhamma talk, it is just like following the speaker, you know, where he leads us, yeah? I see, look at this, you know, and then we look at this, then look at this, and then we look at that, but we don't think about it, yeah? I mean, we let ourselves, you know, it is like, you know, this Dhamma talk is like a water, you know, that flows in the direction and shows us, you know, what to look at it, yeah?
You already said we just go with the...
Go with the flow, yeah. I mean, that was the beginning. So I think that now should be understood. What is the other question?
So for this, he was saying, the reason I ask is if a student focuses solely on meditation, they may get overwhelmed and become detached from the outer world, meaning interacting with people and social activities. Too much of something can be dangerous. I've heard of people going a bit crazy due to prolonged meditation. Sadhguru Paul, thank you for the teaching.
What? Wrong meditation, or what did you say?
Prolonged.
Or prolonged meditation. You have to, I mean, that is a very, that is a concept not only in, not only in the West, you know, if you meditate too much, you know, you get crazy. That is also in Thailand, you know, some people say, you know, it is an excuse for not to meditate, yeah? If you meditate, I mean, you have to understand what is actually crazy. When are people crazy, yeah? People getting crazy when they are in their world of thoughts. Yeah? Everybody is in his world of thoughts. But we can exit this world of thoughts and go into another world of thoughts. Yeah? But people who are actually crazy stay in this world and it is repetitive. Yeah? They cannot come out anymore. They are locked into this world of thoughts. Yeah? And when you understand what this meditation is about is to have no thoughts, then how can you get crazy? Huh? Nobody can get crazy if he does the meditation correctly. And in the beginning I already talked about, you know, what is the correct meditation? It is not pushing, yeah, and having all these ideas how we should behave, yeah? I mean, what we should develop is sati, yeah? The sati will tell us, you know, what to do and how to behave, yeah? Sometimes we do need some corrections from out, but we have the problem in the West, you know, we read too much, we learn too much, we study too much, we have too much ideas about how a monk, yeah, often, I mean, when I'm in the West, lay people, you know, tell the monk how to behave properly, yeah? And then I just think, you know, I don't even know what to say. A monk should behave like this. A monk should behave like, not like you, yeah? A monk should be, and that is, of course, that is where you really, you know, disengage from the world, yeah? A meditator is actually one person who engages much more in the world, but on a different level, yeah? So he's not, you know, for the moment, of course, at the moment where he sits and practices, of course, he is out of the world, yeah? But he makes the way to the heart. And when you understand what I said before, yeah? I mean, the way to the heart is the way to the connection to all beings. So if you don't do it correctly, you know, if you think about, you know, if you frame yourself too much, or if you force yourself too much, I should behave like this, I should behave like this, now I should behave like this, now I should behave like this, then of course you become very estranged and people will think you are crazy, yeah? Yeah. Because I shouldn't look right, you know? Then you become estranged. But a person, you know, I mean, when you saw Lungta Maha, boy, he was such a normal person, yeah? You couldn't see an arahant, yeah? I mean, he's such a normal person, yeah? I mean, there was nothing, you know, I mean, he would let you walk through him, yeah? Without any resistance, there was no, oh, no, you can't, no, you can't, no, you can't, no, you can't, yeah? There was no ego around him, yeah? And the interesting thing, when he was not giving a talk, of course, when he was giving a talk, he was fully present, yeah? I mean, you would feel the force of the Dhamma, yeah? When he stopped the talk, he disappeared, yeah? I mean, he was just like, you know, an old man that you see in the street, you didn't even pay attention to him because, I mean, there's nothing, yeah? We pay attention to people who have a lot, you know, a lot of ego, a lot of power, a lot of this, yeah? But a true arahant, you know, is not like that, yeah? I mean, you don't recognize him, you don't see him, you don't notice him, unless, you know, I mean, he presents something, you know, and then he's fully there. And then you see his, wow. I mean, the full, you know, in the full concentration, the full power of Dhamma. And then when the Dhamma is off, yeah, gone. So I think this answers the question. So do the, you know, just like in the beginning, do the meditation correctly, and I mean, you will notice, yeah, the more you find the way to the heart, the more you are connected with people. But what people think, you know, this empathy, you know. If I see somebody crying, I should hug him, you know, say, oh, it is not so bad, oh, it's not so bad. This kind of thing we don't do, yeah. This empathy is something, you know, that we think, you know, that is, it's just fake empathy, you know. The empathy comes from the heart, yeah. Just like, you know, the gratitude comes from our heart, the empathy comes from the heart, yeah? And if there's something to do, then we do it. If there's nothing, yeah? I mean, how can it is, you know, I should feel sorry for the child that is 10 kilometers away and drowning, yeah? I mean, I feel, you know, I feel sorry for the child, but, you know, I can't do anything, yeah? But if the child, you know, drowns there in front of me, then of course I pick it up and throw it out, yeah? But we think about, yeah, I mean, in our countries we think about the third world, Africa, you know, all these and so on, and the poor kids, yeah. But the beggar there, on the street, on the corner of the street, we don't have any empathy, yeah. We just pass him by and say, he should work, yeah. Huh? And that is a fake, that's what I call fake empathy, yeah. Oh, as long as it is far away, we have lots of empathy. The moment it is right in front of our eyes, then the hate comes up, yeah? And so that is not empathy. So I think that I answered the question correctly, yeah? I mean, did you make a comment, you know? Did you? Just say, you know, in one of the next talks, you know, I will talk about it. It's too complex, you know? Complex questions, you know, I mean, cannot write.
I've had some people tell me before that when they go to a wat or a monastery, and they see walking meditation, and they think, they have crazy people here because they're just focused, you know.
They're focused, yeah.
Focusing on what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it scares somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. And so they think the worst. They think somebody may be crazy.
Yeah, but that is, let them think whatever they think. Yeah.
No, but I heard that before.
Yeah, I mean, people have, I mean, think about people, you know, who are afraid of this. Yeah, they see something, you know, they've never seen, you know, instantly afraid. Yeah. But for the people who do this, you know, they do it all their life and the family knows everything and there's nothing to be afraid of. But for us, yeah, when you look, for instance, when you look at the 15th century or 16th century of the villages and the towns, yeah, I mean, there was one village, there was another village 20 kilometers away. They were afraid of the other people from the other village because they didn't know anything about it, yeah. And they say, oh, no, you shouldn't marry, you know, one from the other village, yeah? It only, you know, through our times, you know, it has become grown more, you know, so the fear became less, yeah? But the fear of new things, you know, is always there, yeah? So, I mean, some people just think, you know, some people come to the monasteries, don't see anybody, and think, you know, it's an empty monastery. Just like me, you know, I said, where are all the monks, you know? But in the morning I saw them, you know, because going on alms round, yeah? And there were, at the time, 34 monks, you know, who were going alms round, yeah? But after the meal, everything was quiet, you know? There was nobody to be seen around, yeah? Unless you didn't go to their kutis where you saw them either sitting or walking, yeah? Yeah, let the people think whatever they want to think, yeah? Yeah? If they come and ask, that's where I can, yeah? If a person is interested in the Dhamma, yeah? I'm not going out on the marketplace and say, please listen to me, you know, the Lord Buddha said this and Lord, preacher, yeah? That's what Christianity normally does, yeah? And that's what, yeah, a lot of Westerners do when they start with Buddhism, yeah? You go home and then we want to convince our friends, you know, and this is the right thing to do, yeah? You fail so hard, yeah? And some people fail so much, you know, that they give up Buddhism. If they can't convince anybody else, you know, then Buddhism is not good for me, yeah? You see it, you know, I mean, this is, it is something, you know, I mean, probably, you know, in the West, this is something, you know, that comes as our education, that we have to teach other people, yeah? No, Buddhism is teaching oneself, yeah? And once you taught yourself, I mean, then, yeah? Then people come in, interested, yeah? Remember what I said about my mother, you know, in the first year, you know, the first year was so tough, yeah? I mean, I had to go through all the difficulties from my life, you know, and all the difficulties. I mean, sometimes, you know, I was in pain for hours and hours, and the tears flowed because of the pain, because I started to see, you know, all the crap that I did, you know, in the past, yeah? So, I mean, I had to work it out and flow it out. And when I visited my mother, then said, "What are you doing? You know, this is not good for you." I mean, yes. I mean, when you're full of shit and the shit comes out, you know, and people start to see that shit, you know, and then they say, "Of course it's not good for you." And I said, "Mother, you don't know. Yeah? Let me go on." Yeah? A year later, I came back, you know, and visited my mother, you know. And then she said, "What are you doing? I want to know that. What are you? Oh, meditation. How do you do that?" Because she saw, you know, that there was a changing process, you know. I switched, you know, from being, you know, once all these bad stuff came out, you know, and then switched, you know, and suddenly she saw that open heart, yeah, and said, "I don't even recognize my own son, you know, I mean." So, I mean, you have to let the people come to you. And as long as they're interested, no matter, you know, I mean, I accept anybody who is interested in the Dhamma to listen to the Dhamma, or who is interested in practice. But when I see, you know, they're not interested in the Dhamma anymore and interested in the practice, then I show them the door, yeah? Because that, you know, they're useless, you know, I mean, they're just a way, yeah, a weight on or a burden, yeah, on this monastery. Not only on me, but also on the monks and on the other monks. Right? Okay, so it's enough for today, yeah. Go practice, yeah.